then next question, for those things that you do not give, what gets in the way? If it's something that you want to give but don't, what do you feel like gets in the way? Yes.
Is the workshop going on?
Yes, you're back in. Just mute yourself now. Thank you.
And then as you're looking at what gets in the way, pay particular attention to what do the voices say? Like you might even think about some particular thing that you don't give, that you would like to give. What do the voices say about that that gets in the way? Okay, the next question is, what do you not receive that is given to you? What do you not allow yourself to receive that is given to you? Again, with this one, what gets in the way? And particularly, what do the voices say? What gets in the way between you and receiving all that you might receive? I'm going to give a little explanation for this one, just for folks who might be new to this practice and kind of things we talk about. I want to talk about self-hatred a little bit and get you to look at self-hatred and, this, and the role self-hatred plays in this. So, you know, in one of the earlier questions, I mentioned the voices. You know, the voices are as a way of talking about the conversation that happens in the mind that talks us into places of unhappiness and self-sabotage and all that that we don't choose. But we get talked into those from the voices of conditioned mind. Self-hatred is a real particular part of that that you can recognize by self-hatred. It's just a voice that of is saying that you're not good enough, you don't deserve it, is judging you in some way like that. So the last question is, as you look at this, giving and receiving and being able to give in some situations or receive in some situations, not being able to give or receive in different situations, what role does self-hatred play in that? Okay, so folks, we'll begin to wrap that up. What we're going to do next is something we'll be doing several times over the course of the morning probably, is to share in pairs, in dyads. Now this can be a little tricky for the Skypers. Some of the Skypers are actually in groups, and so if you're in a Skype group, you guys could divide up and into pairs. Here at in Palo Alto, we'll divide up into pairs. And so here's how that goes. One person will talk and the other person will listen. And if you're in the speaking role, you're just talking about whatever you notice about those questions and what came up for you. It could be, you know, just whatever most interests you about that. If you're in the listening role, then you will just be listening. So you won't be making comments, you won't be clarifying, you won't be trying to draw the other person out, anything of that nature. It's up to you about eye contact. If you would like to make eye contact, that would be fine. If you prefer not to, that would be fine also. So I'll ring a bell to start everybody. So the first person will share for just a very short amount of time, a couple, 3 minutes. And then I'll ring a bell, switch. You'll switch roles. So the person who was speaking will become the listener and vice versa. And like that. And then I'll ring a bell to finish. If you're by yourself as a Skyper, then there's a number of different things you could do during this time. One is you could continue journaling. You could sit in silence and meditate a little bit. If you're familiar with the kind of self-reflecting thing that we do sometimes, when people talk about, where you kind of do some reflective listening with yourself, you could do that also as a way of kind of having a dyad there all by yourself where you are. Any questions about that? Okay, so folks here would pair up with someone who you don't know, if you can. And then just go ahead and decide who's going to go in first and who's going to go second. And I'll ring a bell to get started. Everybody know who's going first and second? Okay, and begin.
Mm-hmm. That's something you have to do in terms of money.
so many injuries.
Okay, thank you, everybody. So this is going to be our first opportunity to talk about something as a group. And so I'll start off here just asking what you notice. And for Skypers, I think you know you can email in and just say you want to talk, and then we'll call on you also. So what do people notice about that? I'd like to share something about that. Claire.
I notice how much self-hate is underneath my giving-receiving system. Mm-hmm. So much that I'm not worthy, that I'm not good enough, that it means something if I receive, so it's better to be small and contained.
It's better, and for both giving and receiving. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you're noticing how much that is underneath all of that, mm-hmm. that you're not worthy, and all the other things that self-hate says, and what it ends up is you end up in a real small place in relationship with that. Mm-hmm.
Indeed. I noticed when asked, because I saw that self-hate coming through as I was doing the exercise, and at the very end when you asked us to really pinpoint on that, I was just hit by a wave of sleepiness.
Uh-huh. Don't look at that.
Yeah, that's really striking.
Yeah, it is striking. I really noticed that for myself too as I was doing the questions also, and that really self-hate is kind of at the bottom of all of it. Mm-hmm. You know, because without, you know, if I'm fully fully giving, receiving what life is offering me and fully giving that, it's like there is no place for self-hate. Mm-hmm. It's like there's no place for it to really stick to. Mm-hmm. And so, but believing in self-hatred, suddenly, you know, like I'm drawing lines here and there and kind of building a little castle live inside of where I'm isolated mm-hmm. from mm-hmm. what I could receive and then feel like I have nothing and so I have nothing to give.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Conrad, I'm so wrong because in you want to receive, or what could you receive that you're not receiving?
Right.
The question, my answer that came to me was not receiving from myself time to do some of the things that mm-hmm. now I would like to do. Mm-hmm. And how wrong that response is, somebody tells me, because it should be that I should give time to myself. I should be giving to other things out there in the world, not giving time to myself.
Right. Yeah, so we might say it is wrong in a certain sense, in the sense that you're getting something taken away from you that you would really like to have, that would be a part of your, you know, what really adds to your life. It's not wrong in the sense that self-hate says it is. I mean, basically it's saying that's your fault somehow. Mm. Instead of, and I think what you saw in the exercise is, it's actually, you know, the voices and the self-hatred that they're supporting that's taking that away from you. You don't really have anything to do with it. You're just kind of being manipulated by those things.
Right.
I also really saw that it was a lot about being small, mm-hmm. staying small, and a lot of the receiving, giving things, you know, it seemed like there was a limit, and that was okay, you know, like I receive this amount, and I give this amount, and that's, you know, kind of staying within this, mm-hmm. but all the parts that were about, you know, what do you not receive, mm-hmm. and why, you know, that kind of direction was, could be kind of going off into a too big of a direction or the wrong direction. So as long as things stay small, you can't really go off. This is the idea behind that, the belief mm-hmm. behind that. You can't go too far off track.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because you actually, just in what you're saying, you were equating doing something big and doing something wrong.
Yeah.
Like those two things could very well, in the belief system, could very well go together.
Right.
So you better kind of stay small, because if you risk kind of stepping out to a larger place, you might find out into something wrong, in quotes, and then I guess something bad would happen.
And it was interesting, too, just at the start of the exercise, because I have an injury and I broke my wrist, and I have not been writing at all, but it's healing. And I can actually do a little writing. But there was a whole big thing around, oh, I shouldn't have even come today. I can't write. What, you know, and there was a whole thing. And then it was like, well, you haven't been writing, but maybe try and see how much you can write. And it's messy, but I wrote things down. Mm-hmm. But there was a whole little moment where it was, well, you know, you had a cast on that. You know, you can't do that. And it wasn't really true. It was part of the process of that.
It's the exact parallel, right? It's the exact same thing. And it sounds like you recognized that was going on, and you guys came in with a different perspective that said, you know, well, we're not talking about calligraphy here. You
know, right. It doesn't really matter. No one is going to read this but me, so I can just scribble something and see
if it works.
And
that's totally okay. Yeah. And I'm projecting in that. There's no such thing as wrong. Like, you've given yourself permission to do that, but you're not going to get judged for it or blamed for it, or you know, self-hate's not going to have anything to do with that.
Right.
Yeah. So I would imagine that that's very much what you're looking for in your life also, in your attempt to move out of whatever kind of smaller than what is possible place that self-hate conditioning has you boxed into. You know, how can you move into a place, a larger place, where it's not, like, stepping in that place is not also setting yourself up to be a target for self-hatred and finding out you did something wrong, getting blamed for that.
Two Skype or something.
Okay, who we got?
Celia.
Yes. I also like last week's very much this idea of staying small.
Okay. Celia, you're vibrating a little here in Palo Alto. What I got was you really related to that, to the idea of staying small. Hang on just a second, Celia. We might have a solution here. Phil.
You may not be her. Tell Mickey. Or Mickey, would you mute yourself, please?
Okay.
Oh, are you still on, Celia?
Okay. Am I still vibrating?
You're still vibrating a little bit. That's okay. Let's give it a try.
Okay. And in my life today, I'm expanding out. And so this is a very pertinent issue for me right now. It's a very a practical situation of taking on a greater presence as an artist in my city. And it's something I've avoided for years. So I just wanted to share that that's a very alive issue in my life right now.
So we might frame it in terms of giving and receiving, that you're seeing ways that you can give more of yourself as an artist in your city. And what you're running into is a bunch of conditioning, it sounds like, that says, no, you can't do that, you need to stay small.
Yes. Exactly.
Uh-huh. And so what do you see about that, Celia? What you know, looking at it in terms of self-hatred and the you know, the kind of the program self-hatred has to keep you small, what do you see what might be possible about that?
What might be possible? I don't know anything other than just watching the voices coming up and telling me, you know, how terrible this is going to be, and then watching it not be terrible.
Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because I bet your experience is that it doesn't actually go that way. I mean, the only kind of bad experience you could have with something like, you know, giving of yourself in that way is what comes from inside, usually. You know, what comes from self-hatred, basically. I mean, other people outside, you might have different opinions about what you did. And some people might like your art, for example. Some people might really not like your art. But, you know, from the point of view of giving, it doesn't really matter because it's about giving. It's not about, like, giving something. But for conditioning, it's very much about giving something. It's got to be the right thing. It's got to be a good thing. And so it sounds like what you are interested in practicing is listening to the voices, what they're talking to you about that, and trying to disentangle that from this thing that you really want to do for yourself.
Yes, and I find it very helpful that you make the distinction between giving and doing something. Thank you.
All right, good. Thanks, Celia. Let's try another Skype group, see how that goes.
We have Jeffrey, and then another one after that.
Okay, Jeffrey.
Am I vibrating?
You are not vibrating. Things must be a little more stable where you are.
Good. I noticed how often I think of myself as not really contributing.
Uh-huh.
And sort of, there needs to be this separation between myself and life.
I see. So you notice that you tell yourself that you're not contributing, and you see that there in the conditioned system there needs to be a separation between you and life.
Yeah, the whole story is that I'm outside somehow, and I'm not really contributing to what's going on or receiving.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Because both giving and receiving will connect you with something outside yourself, won't they?
Yeah, and I just listed the whole page of things that I give and receive that I wasn't even focusing on.
Uh-huh. I see. So as you look at that list, Jeffrey, what's actually true? Conditioning says you're not contributing. Probably also says that you're not receiving in different ways. What's actually true?
Correct. The truth is that it's happening all the time.
Uh-huh.
Whether I'm thinking about it or not.
Whether you're thinking about it or not. Mm-hmm. You mean whether you're intending to give or intending to receive or not, you're actually participating. You're connected to a world that's a lot larger than you, and you're giving and receiving to that all the time.
Yeah. It seems like I can't really avoid being connected, so I might as well be really enthusiastic about it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Boy, it's interesting, isn't it, that we can get talked into a reality where we are disconnected. I mean, I just saw as you're saying that, I mean, we're sitting here, just even here, right here in this room, or for everybody wherever they are, you know, we're receiving the air, we're receiving the food that we ate earlier today, we're receiving the company of everybody who's around us, we're all giving to this group because we're here and we've chosen to give ourselves to this, and that, it's that way all the time as we go through our lives. We're always connected, we're always giving and receiving, and how interesting it is that we would get talked into a world where it seems like that's not going on at all.
Yeah. I'm really interested to see how I go from one to the other.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Now, Jeffrey, do you find yourself in situations in your life where that falls away and you really kind of feel connected and kind of see how you give and receive?
Yes, and I don't think it's a coincidence that those are the times when self-hatred really wants me not to be doing whatever I'm doing.
Yeah, for sure. It's the equivalent of Claire getting sleepy over here. It's like, that's not a good direction to go in. That's too much like, you know, having fun being happy and stuff. That's not good.
Yeah. Well, my when I feel like I'm contributing the most is the art that I do, and I just get a whole bunch of stuff about how it's not valuable, not relevant, all that stuff getting in the way of connecting to it.
Yeah, it really is the connection, isn't it? I'm really getting that from what people are saying, that, you know, that like it's almost like self-hate is I can't think of the exact right image, but, you know, there's a stimulus-response kind of thing. You know, the stimulus is you're stepping out into a larger place, or you're stepping to a place where you're giving or could be receiving, just being more connected with life, say, and that's what triggers the self-hatred and the voices. You know, the more that you're doing that, the louder the voices will be, because the less control it will have over you while you're doing that. And so, like you say, you might as well be enthusiastic about it. Might as well just figure, you know, seeing that, it really gives us the power to do that, doesn't it? To say, you know, I'm not going to buy this program. I know that all that's going on with the voices are, they're just trying to talk me out of what I really want for myself, and being able to contribute of myself to other people and to the world. And so recognizing that, might as well just go as hard as I go at it.
Yeah. I think one of the ways I get hooked into that is feeling like I deserve the hatred that's coming toward me.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I don't know if you know, Jeffrey, that, you know, when Sherry talks about self-hatred, that's often what the way she describes it kind of as a definition. You know, self-hatred is, you know, I don't deserve X. You know, I don't deserve to be happy. I don't deserve to get what I want. I don't deserve to be the person I want to be. I don't deserve to be successful in my life. You know, it's just like this basic, there's something wrong with me, and for that reason, I don't deserve to have the life that I want. And I think you're seeing kind of like the actual mechanical kind of nuts and bolts, on a nuts and bolts level, the way that's happening for you.
Yeah, I think maybe I enjoy something and I feel connected when I do it is actually a good reason to do something.
It really is. Yeah, and you know what's fun about it too, Jeffrey, it's a real contribution. Even though, I mean, most of the world would say, no, that's not a contribution, you're just doing that for you. But to contribute in the sense of being someone who is enjoying life, you know, because that gives energy to life, that gives energy to your life and to everyone, every life that comes into contact with you. So to give yourself the permission to enjoy your life as much as you possibly can is one of the things, and maybe you might even say, you know, the biggest thing you could do for everybody. It's so the opposite of what self-hate says, you know? Because self-hate says, you know, anything that's for me is bad. You know, I need to be giving, but in a completely different way. We'll be looking at this a little bit later. I need to be giving in some way that basically excludes me from everything instead of a way that includes me in everything.
Yeah. Well, and for me, I also have to have a good reason to get something that I enjoy or to do something I enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost never can come up with a good enough reason to do it.
Yeah, of course. Other people, and people in the room are nodding vigorously as you're saying that. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's the another sort of piece of the self-hatred, isn't it? It's got to be conditional. You know, we don't deserve it, we believe. We can get it occasionally if we have a really good reason. Like maybe we've really overcome it in some way, or really done a good job of something, then we get to deserve what we want temporarily. But it doesn't really affect the basic belief that's there that says, you know, fundamentally we don't deserve to have what we want, and so fundamentally we just really won't get that.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, good. Thanks, Jeffrey.
Thank you.
Yeah, Anne.
I thought the most interesting question was the last one. You know, what role does self-hatred play? And it seems like, for me, what I saw was it goes into survival mode.
It goes into survival mode.
Yeah, that it's all about surviving.
Mm-hmm.
So if life is all about surviving, there's really no space for giving and receiving.
Yeah, I just thought of, like, cave people, you know, as you're saying that. I gotta get my little hoard of stuff. Don't touch my stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's no giving and receiving there because, you know, I gotta have this or else I'm not gonna make it.
Yes, exactly. So that really surprised me that, I think that's really what part of what the role self-hate plays is to boil it down to it, you know, I'm separate and I have to survive.
And you have to survive.
Which both are lies, right? Mm-hmm. But that's what it's all about.
Could you, that's interesting, because that's what I was looking at too. Could you speak to how the survival is a lie?
How survival is a lie?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's fear-based.
It's fear-based.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, fear is another word for egocentricity, mm-hmm. and it doesn't exist. So if I'm basically living out of fear, I'm living out of an illusion.
Right.
And so I'm trying to keep an illusion alive, which is a definition of survival, right?
Uh-huh. Trying to keep an illusion alive, yeah.
Which, I mean, it's just kind of absurd when you think about it. But that's what we do, you know, when we get identified.
Yeah, it's like the fear prevents you from being able to see what's actually going on.
Yes.
Which is probably, or rather than me making it up for you, like, what is actually going on, you know, outside of that illusion?
Well, I mean, one of the things I said, you know, with what don't you allow yourself to receive? I mean, I just think about all the breaths I don't receive.
Mm-hmm.
So what's really going on is really nothing and everything.
Uh-huh.
You know, because nothing's going on, but then in survival, it's like a soap opera. It becomes a drama and, you know, you said this and I, you know, blah, 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 you know, everything. Because we end up, as human beings, we get kind of addicted to drama.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Okay, I did. And so then I'm in this whole drama thing when really nothing is going on.
Nothing is actually going on.
Which is actually quite refreshing and relieving to me that nothing is going on.
It really is. Well, it even goes further than that, doesn't it? Because we've got air to breathe. I mean, especially for us, we're so privileged. We have food to eat. We've got this practice we can do. We've got people that we care about and love in our lives.
Yes.
You know, we've got plenty to share.
Yes.
We've got all this energy that's moving through us.
Yes.
And our bodies and our emotions, everything. We have lots to share. So it's like the illusion creates this world where it's the exact opposite of that.
Yeah, that's actually one of the things that I wrote down on my list of what do I receive is a body.
A body. Mm-hmm.
So the sense of to just be here and receive all of that rather than one of the things I said that gets in the way is being caught up in my head.
Mm-hmm.
So to get out, because that's where survival is.
Definitely.
Right? Yeah. And so to just be here, and it seems like I can either be giving and receiving, or I can be attempting to survive as an illusion of a separate self.
Yeah, and so I would imagine, you know, giving and receiving, you're, like we were talking about before, you're connected, mm-hmm. the energy's moving through, mm-hmm. you know, you're not kind of stuck in that little place. In survival, you're in a tiny little place, you're cut off, it feels like there's not enough, there's no abundance there.
Yeah, definitely, that's another thing I wrote down in terms of what the voices say for what gets in the way is not enough.
Not enough of anything.
Fill in the blank. Not enough time, not enough money, not enough people, not enough.
And that's kind of the default perspective from inside that little survival world.
Yeah, yeah, that's just the way it goes. And one of the things that, the reason I was seeing this is I was just recently in this really challenging family situation, and I just watched myself go to a really clear thought. You know how on the Enneagram, it's a personality system of numbers, and they talk about how you, I forget the word.
Under stress.
Yeah, under stress, you go to your, you know, a particular
company. You go to the place you go.
Yeah, for people who know, I'm a 3, and so under stress, I go to 9. And oh my gosh, I just watched myself go to this place of, oh man, it was just, because I was like, I have to survive this. Uh-huh. This is what I have to totally survive. So for me, in terms of what role self-hatred plays is, I end up being a very dysfunctional personality because I have to survive.
You have to survive. Well, yeah, you're not actually living in the world you're living in. So how could you be functional? Because it's like there's all this stuff happening, but it's all being interpreted in a way that is completely different from anything is going on. So how could you actually be skillfully interacting with anything that's going on outside of you?
No, yeah, it's kind of sad.
You don't have to check. Yeah, I love when people on Skype can't see this, but Anne, as she was talking about the survival, you know, indicated her head, and just indicated like this 3-inch section, you know, between the nose and where the hair starts, you know? And that's really how it is. It's like the eyeballs are turned down backwards, and we've got this little movie going in there all the time that's saying, you know, there's not enough, and I've got to effort and struggle and everything. Yeah. Yeah. Whereas when we actually look around, it's like there's no indication of that at all. Yeah.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of that, people probably heard this about the description of hell, that this person walks in and everybody has these long spoons.
Oh,
and
yeah.
In one room, everybody's trying to feed themselves, and they can't because the spoons are too long.
They can't actually reach their mouth.
They can't reach their mouth with the spoon. And in another room, everybody's feeding each other.
This is heaven, right?
Right, but to me, that's the thing. It's like when we're all in that survival mode.
It just took everybody a second to get that. that's a great image, though, isn't it? Yeah, really. That's the giving part.
Yes.
Yeah, because we all receive from that.
Yeah, because when I'm in survival mode, I'm there with my long spoon going, how do I feed myself? It's never going to work. Woe is me. Uh-huh. Life sucks.
Yeah, and there is nobody else.
Right.
There's nobody who, there is no way to cooperate or to interact with the world. It's like you're completely stuck in a situation that absolutely doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Whereas you actually have everything you need.
Yes.
And you have one additional thing you don't need, which is that illusion that makes everything impossible to manage.
Yeah, I have everything I need and I can't see it because I'm stuck in survival.
Yep.
Which is, sad.
Yeah.
Ironical. Yeah.
Sue.
I feel like I have like all these different things going through my head with this. But one thing that kind of comes up about some of that, well, one is my, I feel like a lot of my things were the things that were at a high standard, like to say, oh, all those little things to think about, like your body, all of that, just doesn't even occur to me to put that down on a list and then push
it. Like things you're receiving, for example?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That there's so many assumptions
that
aren't even on the list to put up.
Yeah, that doesn't count. Like having a body, well, that's, who cares? Everybody's got one.
And it's interesting because it's like, with my work, I see people's bodies that don't work all the time. Mm-hmm. And so, like, the amount of assumption that we take is crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I think what you're saying is, like, so your body is working.
My body's generally working. Mm-hmm.
And so, it's like the attention never goes there. It never goes there. It's like, boy, I'm so grateful for my body.
And then when I see people that are in the work situation that they can't do it, all of their attention goes to where it's not working. You know, it's like, because so much of it's not working.
Yeah, boy, that is a sad thing, talking about sad things, you know, going on life, not appreciating one's body, and then
it breaks. It's so far in the assumption list. Mm-hmm. So far in the assumption
list. So no attention goes there, something goes wrong, all the attention goes there. Mm-hmm. But none of it is really in a kind of like a big, generous, giving and receiving kind of way. It's all, do you know what I mean?
Assumption.
It's all assumption, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But another thing that kind of goes along with that, with work that's just in this kind of rattling in my head, is the issue of giving and receiving. I give at work, I give a lot of energy. I get a paycheck in return. You know, like, so that whole idea of where, and then I'm like, lately I've been like, in my own life, that there's nothing in quote unquote return. I haven't been doing that much lately. You know, like I've kind of backed off on being involved with organizations and such. So that's kind of an interesting thing. But what's also interesting is at work, there's, you know, it's like we have to bill for everything. Everything has to have a return to be. But there's plenty of times that I just, you know what, it's not even worth it. Let me just help this person. You know, it's like I don't follow the system. And really, to do that in the system is wrong.
Yeah, so it's wrong to just freely give.
Yeah.
There always has to be a return.
So right. You know, it's like when I think about it, it's a struggle that I deal with all the time, and then some self-hate at some level comes in. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's an exact mirror of what goes on inside, okay. Isn't it, that system? You know, because that's the way, I don't know if this is other people's experience, but it sure is mine. That's the way conditioning looks at it. You don't give nothing. Unless you're getting something back.
Yeah, and that interesting one of work, because it's like, you know, I'm like in such a helping world, but it's like, you know, everyone gives, but it's like, there's something major coming back.
Yeah, are we really getting here? Oh,
yeah.
And then, it really is a question, isn't it? When there's like a deal being made, but then you get to see yourself kind of reflected in another way because you just watch yourself. You have a like an urge to just, you know, give for no reason. You know, give in a way that you're not actually going to receive from it in the way that like either the system on the outside or conditioning would appreciate.
And what's also interesting is that whole idea of, well, how much more could I give of my professional skills? But in today's day, in our American culture, is like, you shouldn't be giving those. You know, like, because I could go, you know, if I have my paycheck that covers it, I can go do lots of the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. But it's like, no.
Yeah, well, it's so interesting, isn't
it? I think it's something that keeps small, because it could be something. Yeah. And then, of course, I listen to all these stories of people that have given their lives to something, I don't you know, that's. And then you start comparing yourself to those really high standards of life.
Exactly.
I might have just given an hour, but they gave their entire weekend, every weekend, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's just another setup for self-hatred. Okay. You know, what all of that seems like ignores is, you know, if you were to actually take those skills you have and just go give it with no, quote, return in the way that people normally look at that, it's interesting that would be, on one level, that would be considered wrong, you know, that's a bad thing to do. But if you were to do that, and I think you know this really well, you would receive big time, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you would receive, not maybe you would get money, maybe, but you would feel alive, you would feel really grateful, you would feel really good about yourself, you would feel like you belonged and you were making a contribution, huge things that we're all really looking for.
Which actually, if I kind of think about it, I question whether when I, because I do that fairly regularly, because, I mean, in a small way at work, but there's that whole thing of you have to be on the sly, blah, blah, blah. But I question whether underneath, actually, when you're doing all of that, a lot of that time, there is that feeling underneath, but it gets squashed.
Yeah. Well, you're not allowed to feel that, are you?
No.
You know? And so we're not allowed to inside because, you know, that would end the self-hatred. Because I can guarantee you, if you were to go out and just say, hey, let me do this for you, and then this it happens at work, it sounds like it too, you're going to feel good about yourself.
Well,
you're
there's so many conditions at work of you need to be productive, you can't be doing someone else's job. I mean, we've created it to quote-unquote create efficiency.
Right.
But
instead of generosity.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for you to just give, you're going to receive everything that you want, really. And so, and there will be no place for self-hatred in that. So how's that going to work? You know, we've got to make sure that gets bottled up into something else that, you know, never gets let out.
Which I question whether it just keeps getting portrayed. It starts as an individual, becomes a small group, becomes a larger group, becomes a nation.
Well, we're all colluding in it, if that's what you mean.
Yeah.
Do people see that?
That
we're all colluding? Like in the self-hatred. You know, we're all playing this game where we're not allowed to have the lives that we want. And so we want everyone else to be doing that too, so we can feel like we're doing the right thing, and you know, so we're not, you know, weird or whatever. And I think that's why it takes so much courage to, you know, people are talking about over here about being big, you know, to really step out into a completely different place. I mean, it takes a lot of guts, because you're going up against the whole system in here and also the whole system in there that's all dedicated to everyone staying as small as possible and unhappy as possible and as disconnected as possible. Michael, were you raising your hands for you or for somebody out there?
I got two Skypers.
Okay, who we got?
We got Rebecca's next.
Rebecca.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you good.
Good. Well, I'm just watching here what self-hate is doing to me as I think about putting out what I noticed. And I've already been through shame, belittling, and distraction.
All right. We're covering the bases here.
Say what?
I said, people are laughing, Rebecca, and we just said, we're covering the bases here. You're heading through the program really quickly.
Yeah. Hang on, let me plug in so I can hear you better. Let me plug in my earphones. I was trying to put out the earphones. Okay, this is better.
Can you hear me all right now?
Yeah, I can hear you much better now.
Okay, good.
And so what was coming up around the shame was the strongest. It was that I would dare to want to give what I said I want to give, that, you know, I'm so not, you know, what everybody else is saying. And it occurred to me in watching how the shame gripped my heart, my chest. And what occurred to me was that I used to feel that same way about my reassurances. I remember when I first started doing reassurances, I was living in this horrible fear that somebody would find my tape and hear it, and like I would be so shamed if somebody knew I was saying kind things to myself like that.
Hey, Rebecca, let me explain what that is for anybody. There might be some folks on the call who don't know. So what Rebecca's talking about is a little practice we do of attempting to bring kindness to our life, where we make a recording of different compassionate things we want to say to ourselves and listen to it. And so, Rebecca, what you're saying is you used to feel that same shame around your reassurances that you now feel around other things.
Yeah, and now I actually just, you know, talk about it quite freely that I do this. I mean, the shame is totally gone. I've just, you know, over the years have worked through it. And seeing that pattern, it gives me great encouragement that this shame is really nothing more than just that. Because for years, around what I want to give has been, it just gives me encouragement that will too dissolve in the same way.
Yeah, that all it is just the machine that is there to try to make us suffer. That's all that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And Rebecca, when you look at your, like, who and how you are now compared to, you know, a few years ago when maybe you first started working with those reassurances, can you see how you've changed?
Oh my gosh, yeah. It feels like there is so much more support within this one person. Like when I first got into this practice, it's like there was just this one little brave sort of part of me that for some reason was willing to go to the monastery for the first time, but she didn't really have any other support within this body of Rebecca.
Mm-hmm.
And now it feels like there's kind of this whole community that is working together for that good.
Uh-huh. Yeah. One of the ways you change is just basically your fundamental relationship to kind of who you are and how you want to be in yourself.
Yeah. I think of it in terms of all these little different parts of myself, though, kind of stepping forward.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that is, and the me that you're saying is the relationship has changed, is really a collective of me's in a way, you know?
Well, it's that, and then I'm not sure exactly what you mean by the collective, but what I'm sensing is so instead of all of the yous, you know, like for people who might not be familiar, you know, we talk about all these different aspects of ourselves, these different parts of ourselves who, you know, kind of play different roles and come and go in our lives, and we become all these different people as we go through our lives in order to sort of adapt to the situations that we're in and to survive. And so what I'm really hearing and what you're saying, Rebecca, is a change in your relationship with self-hatred. And so that change is, you know, perhaps originally there's all those different parts of you attempting to survive in the way that they survive, and sort of what's kind of, I'm quoting, making quote marks with my fingers, kind of parenting them is self-hatred, basically. You know, so no matter what you do, it's not going to be good enough, and so you have to survive, kind of going back to what we were talking about before. It sounds like the change that's been made is you still got all these parts of you, but they're being mentored in a way where there's more kindness and more support and more compassion.
Yeah, absolutely. And because that compassion is really in charge now more often than certainly than it used to be, it really is kind of the, I want to say this, but something is preventing me. It's like, I wanted to say, it seems like compassion is more, has become more the default mm-hmm. mode. And because that is so much more available now, let me just put it that way, that it's, that the compassion is more available, then it has enabled all of these other little parts who have do have things to give to be emboldened to offer it. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm thinking of, you know, kind of like actual outside little kids. You know, if you've got an outside little kid who's always being told that he or she is not doing it good enough and is there's something wrong with them and they should shut up and all that kind of stuff, you know, they're not, pretty soon, they're just going to kind of sit there and be, you know, be quiet or act out in the different ways that they will. But to have someone there who's encouraging them and supporting them and not judging them and helping them to understand how they can, you know, work with the different things that they have, oh my gosh, what an opening there is for a lot of, you know, energy and a lot of giving to happen.
Yeah, and where I'm seeming to hit the wall now, can you still hear me?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, where I'm seeming to hit the wall now is this part that feels older than these other little ones, and it's hang on, let me try to disidentify from this shame here. It's like this part that wants to give some ideas, some, you know, some teaching, some guidance to the world. Mm-hmm. And
are the voices getting to you, Rebecca? Is that what's happening?
Yeah.
So this is it, isn't it? This is your edge.
Yep. Yeah.
Do you see, can you see how you're being stopped?
Yeah. My big sister's face when I was a little kid, she used to call me a show off and a know it all and all of that, and it's like it's like that's right here, but it's not her, it's self-hate, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's self-hatred, yeah. So, as you were saying before, Rebecca, it's really the same thing as always, isn't it? At one time, self-hate came in at a much kind of lower and simpler level, and it could stop you in, stop you in a much smaller place, but you've changed. Your relationship inside has really changed. There's a lot more compassion there and support there than has been there before. And yet you're still moving and you're still growing and you find yourself wishing to step into larger and larger places, and the same thing happens.
Yeah, thanks. That's kind of calling forth that place again. I appreciate that. It's there now, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's good to know that. It's good to see that it's a process, because it always is the same, and it's always going to be the same. And so you know, and I think all of us can relate to this, you know that you have gone up against that before and have gone through it and succeeded and have chosen a place that's bigger than self-hate would allow.
Yeah.
And so you know you can do that. You know you have the power to do that. And so now it's just more of the same. And so like you said before, you know that you will go through this also, and you'll go through it the exact same way you did before. And when you do, you will be a larger person than you know right now.
Yeah, and just seeing how the role of Sangha, I mean, just having you reflect that back to me, what I just said maybe 5 minutes ago, you know, and reflecting that back, it just took me right out of that place, which is exactly how the process works, how the growing process works, is that we, you know, we get stuck, we remember, we get stuck, we remember, you know, back and forth, in all the various ways that we can do that.
Yeah, and like you were saying before, Rebecca, over time it gets internalized. So in this case, you know, somebody outside of you said something, but that's exactly the same thing that goes on inside. You know, that's exactly the support you're talking about. So, you know, it's the reassurances, another way of looking at it. So you're going through, and that reminder is possibly there all the time. And the more you practice and the more you experience what's true instead of all the lies that conditioning is telling you, the more there's, you know, that kind of guidance and support available inside of you, even if you're not talking to anybody.
Yeah, well, it's very great to see the edge and to see how to move beyond the edge. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, y'all, let's move on and do something else. Are folks okay with that, or do you need to move around, or okay, Shay?
We had one more Skyper.
One more Skyper? Okay, let's see. Okay, let's do one more Skyper, and then we'll do the next thing.
Maria.
Maria.
This is Karen coming back.
Okay. Is Maria there?
Yes, Maria.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm getting a lot of feedback.
Yeah, we're getting some feedback here, too. Do you have are you using headphones?
No.
Do you have any?
I do. I have to go pick them. Maybe I'll do that. I'll participate later. It's okay.
Okay, well, don't forget what you've got, because we'd really love for you to be able to participate. How about we'll go ahead and do this exercise. Maybe you can grab your headphones in the meantime, and then we'll try again in a minute.
Okay, thank you.
So this is another kind of writing thing. It really is just kind of the next step along the lines of what we were talking about a minute ago. People have alluded to it already. I thought it might be fun to look at the different players who were involved in this. And so first, now what I'm going to ask you first, I'm steering you in a real particular direction here. I'm steering you towards the conditioning. Okay, not towards, you know, the heart, the experience of the heart, when the heart receives, or when the heart gives, but really towards the conditioning. So what I want to ask you is, now, I guess folks, let's see, I should probably explain a little bit. I mentioned this a minute ago about these different parts of ourselves that we have. And, you know, these different parts kind of come and go, and they kind of take over. And we think that they're real. We think that we are, like, for example, I've got a part who's like a good little boy kind of a guy. And he really wants to do a good job. He really is really sensitive to feedback. And, you know, he's kind of scared, but he's a good little guy. He's trying to do a good job all the time. That would be an example of a different of a part that I have. And so what I'm going to ask you is who. And when I say who, what I'm asking is what part of you. So the first question is, who gives in different situations? And again, I'm steering you towards the conditional thing. So you might look at different kind of situations that you get into in your life, like with family, perhaps, or at work, or even when you're by yourself, or in different kind of relationships you have. So who gives? We were talking about this earlier with the paycheck thing that we're talking about with Sue. And with what agendas or expectations? So the gives in this is in quotes. You know, who gives, quote. And with what agendas and expectations? And Skypers, as I'm giving these instructions, if you have any questions, go ahead and just unmute yourself and jump in and ask so that I can make sure you're on the same page. Example. So the good little boy example would give in quotes in order to be recognized. So that would be kind of an agenda that he would have, just so he could feel good about himself. And then as you're looking, you can take it to another level, a little bit deeper too. I asked you to look at the agendas and expectations. You can also look at, you know, what are the needs there for that part of you? What do they actually need that they're trying to get met through, quote, giving? And then along with that, as you're looking at that, what words occur to you in, not to explain it so much, but just associated with that? For example, you know, with my good little boy and the recognition, you know, it's kind of tight, it's contrived, it's a little manipulating, things like that. So what kind of words come up as you look at the kind of giving in quotes that we're talking about? Okay, your next question, in comparison to that, what's it like when the heart gives? Mm-hmm. See if you can find some words, like what kind of words would you associate with that? For example, for me, it would be, you know, free, generous, expansive, happy. next question, again, we're going for the conditional part here. Who, quote, receives? Who receives? And consider what's actually going on there. For example, looking at a lot of my ways I, quote, receive, there's actually not any receiving happening, it's more taking. So like that. So who receives, and what is actually kind of going on there? And again, with this, see if you can, what words come up associated with this? The quote receiving, the receiving is not really receiving. How does that feel, and what kind of words do you, comes up to describe that? Okay, and then, like before, in comparison to that, what's it like when there is real receiving going on? When the heart is there and there's a real receiving from life, how is that different? And what kind of words might you think of to describe that experience? Okay, so let's share in dyads again. You can. It might be good to choose a different partner this time, if you don't mind. And we'll do the exact same thing, where I'll ring a bell and we'll share what we saw about that. So if you get yourself a partner. Already been part
of
this. See, so let's see if we can split you up a little bit. Do you guys mind trading partners? Great. Okay, so decide who's going to go first, who's going to go second. And then whenever you're ready.